Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life. Welcome to Namaste Radio. I'm your host, Marie. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Today on the show, we have Dr. Bernie Siegel. He is the author of 101 Exercises for the Soul, Simple Practices for a Healthy Body, Mind, and Spirit, as well as 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, and a slew of other books. His background is he used to be a children's surgeon, and he got into mind and body wellness. Dr. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You might say the kids were my teachers. You know, they're so honest and in the moment. They taught me about life and living.
And so was it your work with children that inspired you to look into the mind-body connection?
Some of, yes, in this sense, that it is even, I mean, I took care of adults too, but it was the pain of watching children suffer, have things like cancer, and really getting into spiritual questions. You know, why would God make a world like this? You know, if you were creating a world, would you do this to children? And so I attended some workshops, which I thought were more about treating cancer and things, you know, for doctors. But when I got there, I realized the doctors didn't go. The patients went to the conference. So I was sitting in a room with 125 people with cancer, say, and there were two psychotherapists and myself were the only health professionals. And this sentence changed my life from one of my patients, because she came over and sat down next to me, say, a very different setting than in the office. And she said, "You're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits." When I heard that, I thought, okay, then I don't have to feel like I'm failing when I can't cure something. I can help people live. And to make a long story short, if you help people live, they don't die when they're supposed to. I mean, it really makes a difference in your body. So that's where you end up, you know, writing books like this to help people live. Hemingway used this sentence in one of his books. He said, "The world breaks everyone. Some of us become strong at the broken places." Now, to me, that's sad. I mean, it's literally physically true. You know, if you break your arm and it heals, how strong it gets. But why wait for a disaster to learn how to live and become strong? So what I try to do is use the wisdom of the ages, so to speak, and the sages, and modernize it. Because I always say, I have nothing new to tell you. You know, we've had a few thousand years with some pretty bright people, you know, whether it's a Jesus or a Buddha or a whole host of other resources, there are a lot of people who have helped us understand how to live. And I try to modernize their message because there are common themes. That's the other thing I found, that whether you're going to an addiction meeting, dealing with cancer, United States Marine or whatever, you will learn that there's certain behaviors that help you survive. That's what I try to teach people, what I call survival behavior. So you have role models and reach for your potential. You know, you don't curl up and die when you're supposed to. And I have to add one more story, because when you talk about children, many years ago, we have five children. One of them said his leg hurt, and I kept telling him to take a hot bath. And then he tells me at age 7, I need an x-ray. So we take an x-ray, and he has a bone tumor, which 95% chance it's a malignant tumor that's going to kill him. And I went home totally depressed after seeing his x-ray and tried to get across to my wife and the other kids that, you know, your brother's going to be dead in a year. We got to deal with this. The next day he came to me. I'm sitting at my desk at home, and he said, Dad, yeah, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, yeah, what is it? He said, you're handling this poorly. It blew me over. A seven-year-old then gave me a lecture on, we want to go out and play in the yard and have a nice day, and you want us depressed in our room. And we were lucky. A week later, he had a rare benign tumor. But you see, that week educated me, if you know what I mean, about helping people to live. And so that's why it's hard for me to not literally write books on parenting, love, magic, and mud pies, and books on, you know, daily messages of hope and love and inspiration and practices for a healthy body, mind, and spirit. Because what I find is I try to reparent people. Maybe that's the best way to put it. That if they don't grow up with love, it's, you know, they become self-destructive and abusive and may injure others. You know, you read all the headlines because of indifference, rejection, and abuse that people grow up with. And then they take it out on others. You know, whether you fly a plane into Internal Revenue Building or walk into school and shoot your teachers and your fellow students, I mean, those are not accidents. They're about what's going on in that person's life from day one. So if I can reparent people and give them some self-worth and self-esteem, then some wonderful things will happen in their life.
So, Dr. Bernie, do you feel that a lot of your readers are those people who didn't get the love that they needed when they were children?
Well, I think it's less likely that they will pick up the book, truthfully. But what I try to get across to them is that I do love you. And you are special. You are a divine child. I do care. And my hope is that if I do that, they will take a peek at it and take a look and you know, see where it applies to them and their life and what has happened to them. So they understand it's not about guilt, shame, and blame. You know, what did you do wrong to get sick or to be where you are? Well, let me, again, give you a specific example. A woman was screaming at her plastic surgeon after he operated on her for a melanoma, skin-type cancer. And he called me and he said, I don't know what's going on with her. Maybe you can help me if you'll talk to her. He said, she's got an incision on her upper thigh. You don't even know she's had an operation. And she's screaming at me for making her ugly. So she came over to the office and I said, and I would say this to anybody listening who has a health problem or any kind of problem. I said, please describe what it's like, what you're going through. See, not your diagnosis, malignant melanoma, but what is it you're going through emotionally? And think of what words would pop out of your head. Her word was failure. And I said, how does that word fit your life? She said, well, my body has failed. I said, that's not my question. My question is, how does failure fit your life? And then she looked at me and said, oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child. That started her on a whole new life, and I mean that literally, because she was afraid of relationships. So she lived this life, as she said, I have a job, I know everybody's name, that's where it stops. And the cancer, that word, and suddenly, boom, every time I'd be given a lecture, she'd be sitting in the audience. I mean, I knew she was soaking this in and making a change in her life. And I see the same thing with others, you know, who say words like failure, draining, roadblock. What would I like to hear from everybody? And some say this. What are you experiencing? Remember, this is with a life-threatening illness. Gift, blessing, wake-up call, new beginning. And I learned that's really what I have to help people do, rebirth themselves. And I don't say that in a religious context, but, you know, being born again is about creating the life you were meant to live. So, see, our bodies love us, but if we don't love our life, what does your body try to do for you? Get you out of it, either through death or an illness. So Monday morning, while everybody's moaning and complaining, say, you have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. And the body thinks it's doing you a favor sometimes to get you sick. So you don't have to go to work now. You don't have to go to school now. I gave our kids health days. You see, I began to understand this. So I said to our kids, look, you don't want to go to school? It's okay. You have 5 days every semester. All you have to do is come in the kitchen in the morning, say, Dad, I'm taking a health day. I will understand. It's your day. You could stay in bed, go do something with your friends, whatever it is. And that way they realize we don't have to get sick to get a day off. You know, they don't have to come in complaining, my stomach hurts, my head hurts, I have a fever. And it really had an effect on them as kids to understand that they had power over this, you know, and could use healthy time and not have to be sick to stay home or avoid something.
Well, one of the things, Dr. Burney, that I noticed, first of all, if you want to get on the air and ask Dr. Burney a question, the number to call, what is the number to call? It's probably up on your screen. I'll find it for you in a moment. But feel free to give us a call and ask a question. But I was reading your book, 101 Exercises for the Soul, and the introduction to Chapter 19, which is Balancing Act, Brian Dyson from Coca-Cola, I believe he was the CEO of Coca-Cola, he made the analogy of the five balls up in the air, work, health, family, friends, and spirit. And the analogy was that work is a rubber ball, and if it falls down, it'll bounce back up. But the other four, health, family, friends, and spirit, are all very fragile and made of glass. So those are the ones that you really need to keep up in the air. That's work is the one that you can let drop. But I find and I observe and I know through my own experience that so many of us put work ahead of everything else,
right,
even though that's the one thing that will bounce back.
And more men than women. Well, I mean, it depends what you define as work. But let me put it in another way. You see, that if work becomes the important aspect in your life, I hear men sitting in my office with their wife and children next to them say, there's no point in living, I can't work anymore. And I said, I think there are three good reasons here. Your wife and two children. Oh, I mean, it's like I hit him in the head with a mallet. You know, he refocused. You also hear women say, see, women with the same cancers live longer than men. It's about relationships and connections. But picture this. You have nine children. I don't make up these stories. Please understand. The woman said, I can't die till they're all married and out of the house. And 20 years later, the ninth kid left home.
Wow.
Her cancer came back, and she died. Now, what blew my mind as a doctor is, where the hell is it for 20 years? But I think it's what's going on in her body, her immune function, everything else. You see, I can't die. I've got to be there for the kids. I've seen the same thing when people have 10 cats in the house, you know, and they're worried, if I die, who's going to take them? So, yeah, there are families where I say, don't get rid of the cats. They're keeping your mother alive. But the point is, don't live a role. Don't be mama. Don't be the wage earner. Live an authentic life, see? Why couldn't she be her 10th kid? And now that they're out of the house, go have a good time, see? And that he doesn't see that it's what I do that's important. It's again, about all the other things that are mentioned. Family, health, friends, spirit. You know, there's more to it than just how much money can I bring home this week. And sometimes I say it's who's your Lord. You know, if it's material things, you live a very different life than if it's a spiritual things or family, making it a better world. See, I just picture all these people I've taken care of. Young man came into my office. He had an illness. He said, my father ruined my life. I said, what did your father do? He gave me $1 million when I was 21. I said, there are people in the waiting room who are ready to handle your problem. I don't understand. He said, I had to be a success. And that really hit me, see? Because not go and do something good for the world, but go make money. You got to be a success. And what was his message that he learned in therapy? If you're happy, you're a success. If you're a success, you're not happy. So he changed his life. And I hope, you know, and I think he did have the courage to go to his father and let him know that this is not about going to make more money, but I want to have a joyful life. See, I want to live my life. I don't want to lose my life doing what you want. Because, you see, teenagers, I mean, these are some things I had read, that fourth leading cause of death, age 10 to 14, was suicide. Blew my mind. and that 70%, this I know, of high school students have contemplated suicide. If you give them homework, they have no trouble writing 3 to 5 pages on why they ought to commit suicide. They have a lot of trouble on writing why they're worth loving. And really, many of them feel there is no point in it. They're losing their life trying to make mommy and daddy happy, you know, whatever profession, what they want them to do. Like there was an article in the paper today that a lot of kids don't want to go to college. They'd like to learn to do things, you know, different, you know, practical skills and occupations. But I know as a parent, especially with 5 children, that if our first son had said to me, I'm not going to college, I would have jumped up and down, screamed and yelled and told him he was. But I can tell you, by the time we had, you know, 5 of them, and the 3rd and 4th and 5th said, you know, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. I said, fine. It makes you happy. Go do it. Now, they might come home a year or two later and say, you know, I think I'm going to go to college now. I got a new interest. Fine. But I always said to them, as long as you're educating yourself, that's what I'm interested in. I'll try to be there to help you, you know, financially and so forth. And that way they pursued their interest and their happiness. And sometimes it was a crazy, you know, devious course, because I even remember writing to one college saying, I know he's a lot older than normal, but he's a bright kid and he's done a lot of things. And the college wrote back saying, you know, it's okay for a father to say something nice about his son. Because I said, you may not believe me, you know, that what father would write a terrible thing about his child who's applying to college. But I just thought they needed to know he's a lot older because he did all kinds of things that interested him. And I just felt that as long as it was still part of education, then go, enjoy your life and do that.
Well, it sounds, Dr. Burney, like you're saying that the way to stay healthy and happy is to follow the things that make you happy, and that the career and the success are really secondary. They're something that can flow from pursuing the things that you love.
Yeah, I'd say they're the instrument. Because they always say to people, how do you want to contribute love to the world? See, if you said, I want to run a restaurant, I want to drive a bus, I want to be a doctor, okay, you're going to meet people. And if you can make the people happier, then you're doing something wonderful. One of our sons ran a Subway franchise for a while, and I loved working there. I always say, as a surgeon, I got gloves, a knife, and a uniform. So it was like being in the operating room. But I had power over people, as crazy as that may sound, because they'd come in and say, I'd like a sandwich. And I'd say, answer a question, make your sandwich. What's your question? How would you introduce yourself to God? What's the best day of your life? Who's the most important person in your life? And I have about 80 questions. And literally, we'd get into therapy sharing some wonderful things with each other. And so I enjoyed working because I was getting a chance to interact with people. Yeah, if I stood there and said, what do you want? Here's your sandwich. No, I would have been bored and unhappy. But by interacting, then some wonderful things happened. And people enjoyed it too. They'd sit and keep talking, you know, when they were done eating. They didn't leave because, you know, more people would come in and we'd have a group therapy session going over, you know, my question. You see, let me just say it in a simple way if people want to do this. Because I went into the bank one day when the teller said, you know, it came over to me. I said, what's the best day of your life? She said, oh, when I gave birth to my daughter. Somebody else in the bank yells, you're wrong. She looks at her, what do you mean I'm wrong? I said, what she's trying to tell you is, today is the best day of your life. So then everybody in the bank starts talking, you see, about today and, you know, enjoy the day. And it's not something in your past. And it just makes a family out of everybody.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, Dr. Burney, you have the book 101 Exercises for the Soul. And as I was reading it, for me, I'm one of those like homework people, and so I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, well, there's so many wonderful exercises in here. But my question for you is the intention of the book for us to do every single one of these exercises and incorporate them all?
I'm glad you brought that up, because what I found, see, I grew up with love, got along with God, and did well in school. So I'm a minority group. I mean, you know, I didn't grow up with guilt, shame, and blame. Yeah, my parents could be critical of me, but I knew they loved me. And so when I start giving all these exercises, yes, there are people who call me up and say, oh, I felt guilty, or I only did one, you know, should I have done more than one that day? And no, it's to help you. You know what I mean? That's why I say, if it's a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, they don't call me up and say, I feel terrible, I had such a wonderful day, I forgot to read your book. Good, you had a wonderful day, that's what I'm interested in. So I would say to read it and make it comfortable for yourself. So if something comes up in your life and you say, boy, I could use a little help on that, okay, look for a topic, you know, that may fit your problem, and then what can I do and how can I help change it? You know, like, I mean, chapter 10 is pain is necessary. Now, you may say, but how can pain be necessary? I don't want, but it helps you know yourself, define yourself. Even what I talked about before, if I said to you, you know, you said, gee, I'm having a lot of migraine headaches. Okay, what's it like? Pressure. Oh, thank you. You know, you look at what's causing pressure in your life, what's leading to headaches, and can help you. And the other is something that has really helped me, because believe me, I'm not free of troubles either. I may write books, but it doesn't mean I'm not trying to live the sermon also. A sentence from Nietzsche that Joseph Campbell shared was, love your fate. And Campbell said, what he's trying to tell you is, no matter what hell you're going through, ask, why did I need this? Say, so you can say, and I define pain in a broad way. It could be emotional, physical. But if you said, okay, why do I need it? Why should I love my fate? Then it becomes your teacher. See, that those are the people who say it's a gift, blessing, wake-up call. And I've learned that myself. When I sit down, because let me explain. As a doctor, I'm always trying to fix everything in the family, say. And I find myself getting angry that the person isn't doing everything I want them to do, and I can't make the disease go away. But when I say, whoa, why do you need this? How about loving your fate? Then suddenly I realize what it's trying to tell me is, how about becoming more caring, more loving, instead of, you know, curing? How about helping them heal and live with the situation? And then, well, you can hear the change in my voice when I shift to that. And so, again, I'd say, yes, learn from your pain. Learn from your hell. Let it become a teacher. And then the curse becomes a blessing because you become a more complete person. And life gets a lot easier that way. But I'm not trying to make it harder. You know, that's where I say the guilt, shame, and blame. Because if you didn't grow up with parents who loved you, if your religion makes you feel guilty, if teachers have made you feel like a failure, then it's hard for you to say, oh, he has exercises, but what if I don't do them right? What if I don't love enough? What if it's not about that? As I said, it's about your potential. Give it a shot. What do you got to lose?
So, Dr. Bernie, do you have any tips for people who maybe have that type A personality, who are just, that's habitually the thing that they go to is like, okay, look at this book. I have to do everything that's in it, and I have to do it perfectly. Mm. And that's just like how we're wired. Do you have any tips for people like that?
Well, you know, I would say what I'm often saying to people is act as if and behave as if. And let me explain why. Because if you put actors on a stage and draw their blood, it's altered by the role they're playing. If it's a tragedy, immune function goes down, stress hormone levels go up. If you put them in a comedy, which is one of the chapters, humor will help you, you know, finish. But if you're in a comedy, immune function goes up and stress hormone levels go down. So when people understand that their behavior, like I describe my own behavior, what do? Act and behave as if you're the person you want to be and rehearse and practice. So if you said you're obsessive, you know, perfection, tell the people you work with, the people you work for, and your family, I'm open to your coaching and your criticism. So if you see me behaving in a way that I really don't want to be, let me know. Okay? And that's how you know you're a good soul, that you're willing to listen to people give you feedback or criticism and not make excuses. Then they appreciate you and are willing to put up with you, you know, and help you to become a better person. I mean, a line, for instance, our kids used was, Dad, you're not in the operating room now. So when I would become overbearing, you know, I'm in control, I'm the chief here, they would come up with that line. And it was okay. And I would take a deep breath and you know, settle down a bit and try to fit back in instead of giving orders and commands. And I think, again, I didn't realize it, but I got a lot of criticism from nurses and patients and family, but they were telling me how to be a better doctor. And because I wasn't in their position, I wasn't in the bed, so I had to understand their position and their experience. And that's the key over and over again. What are you experiencing? That's what you need to keep looking at and get people to help you become the person you want to be.
Wonderful. Well, if you want to get on the air and ask Dr. Bernie a question, the number is 347-202-0129. That's 347-202-0129. Or if you're in the chat room, feel free to ask your question through the chat and I can pass it on to Dr. Bernie. So I wanted to talk more about 101 Exercises for the Soul, and also, is that, did that come from 365 Prescriptions for the Soul?
Well, it's, yes, I'd say I like them as a team. The 365, and believe me, I read my own books, because when you are done writing, it's hard to remember all the wisdom you put in it. So every evening before I go to bed, I pop 365 prescriptions open to see. It's like my unconscious picks the page. What do I need to know today? And I'd say the same way with 101, that it's, again, but it gives you more practical bits of advice. In other words, yes, I have to say it, in 365, they're what I call solutions, you know, but it's a sentence that tells you how to think and feel and so forth. And in the 101 exercises, it's more really telling you things you can do in your life, your family, all these things. You know, I could start reading to you, but, you know, if you just open, you have a topic, and then you literally have exercises, like where we talked about humor, you know, watch a comedy, share a funny story, keep a smile journal, read the comics, do the unexpected. You see, what I have realized, I mean this, that we're all multiple personalities, but if you don't grow up with love, the personalities are afraid of the world and relationships. If you grow up with love, you can go out and have fun in the world. You can be a character, you see. Act silly. And you're not worried about what people think. And you help other people laugh and really make it an easier day. And one more that I really exercise, keep a smile journal. I mean, I was keeping a journal years ago because my life was just so painful. I couldn't stand not expressing myself, getting it out. And there's no place to do it at the hospital. And I would make little notes and come home. And the first thing I realized was I didn't remember what the notes were about, that I had seen these painful experiences and couldn't remember what they were about. Like I might write child in the emergency room, and 12 hours later would say, child in the emergency room, what was that about? So I learned to write a full paragraph so I would remember what that was about. But one night when I was exhausted and forgot to hide my journal, my wife found it. And she said, honey, there's nothing funny in it. I said, my life is not funny. And then she told me jokes that I told them at dinner, her and the kids, and had them all laughing, crazy things that would happen in the hospital. And they never got in my journal. And she made me so aware that I was not paying any attention to the joyful things that happened. So, yes, I began to do that. And I would say to everybody, yes, keep a journal. You can put the painful things there, too, so they're not stored in you, but get expressed and come out, but also remember the humor. And studies show us, see, a lot of what I was called crazy about, how emotions affect survival, now have studies that prove it. So cancer patients who laugh live longer. And you don't need to have anything funny told to you. In other words, if you just start laughing four times a day, and I say to anybody listening, tomorrow, every 3 hours, laugh for a couple of minutes for no reason. Watch how you feel when you're done laughing. And you'll find it's hard to stop because I've learned that. Often when I'm out walking the dogs, I'll just laugh. And then I can't stop. I keep giggling and laughing, and I can't get control of myself. It feels good, but I realize, wow, what an effect it has on you and your chemistry and your feelings to do that. And my wife used to do stand-up comedy, like a female Henny Youngman, as part of the talk, because I wanted people to see the benefits. So she would get people laughing for, you know, 15 minutes, and I'd say, how do you feel now? Because I could see the audience change after they'd laugh. I mean, they're all sitting up looking 5 years younger after listening to me for an hour. And what a difference. See, and then I could come back and talk for another hour, and everybody was ready to listen. So we're talking about your life, your physiology. Remember, I said your body loves you. Let it know you're enjoying your life. Then it'll do amazing things for you.
Dr. Bernie, when you're talking about laughter, and I know that your background is working with kids, I remember when I was a young teen, like 12, 13 years old, I would get the giggle fits, and I would be on the floor, rolling around hysterically, not able to control myself. And now, as an adult, I mean, I laugh easily, but it's not that same depth of laughter. It's not that uncontrollable laughter. And I'm wondering, in your experience, what do you think the difference is between those kids who just can't stop laughing? And
I'd say you're more concerned with what other people think and how you think about yourself. I mean, I don't know how you'd feel rolling around the floor, you know, for 10 or 15 minutes laughing. See, you might say, oh, that's silly, that's crazy, I can't, you know, how can I behave like that? But I don't have a problem with that. So when I'm out in the world, yeah, I have a good time. You know, I mean, it's simple things. Like if people say, sign here, I write here. I mean, whenever I check out of any market, I always say, don't forget my senior discount. And they look at you like, and some of the clerks give you a discount because they don't know if you're serious, going to cause a problem, you know. But one of the things, if people really want to know how that the world is wounded, so if I can help people laugh and smile, that's what I really would like to do. And so there's one or two things you can do. And this happened to me. A woman behind me in Stop and Shop poked me in the back and said, she had a bandage over her eye, and she said, you're the only person in Stop and Shop who hasn't asked me what happened. That impressed me. See, she has a visible wound, and everybody's talking to her because we're all wounded, but they'll know, she'll understand. I can talk with her. The other thing that I do, so I'm saying to people, you want, go to work tomorrow with a bandage over your eye, and I guarantee you, people you've worked with for 10 years will tell you things they've never told you before about their troubles. The other is, when people say to me, how are you? I say, well, I've run out of my antidepressant, my doctor's away on vacation, so I can't refill my prescription. 80% of the people, my wife pointed this out to me, she said, honey, what you're saying isn't funny, you're not listening. 80% of the people were saying, I know how you feel, offering me their antidepressants.
Wow.
And I got a hug the other day from a woman I don't even know, you know, who's the clerk. How can I help you? I said, well, I'm out of my antidepressant. She said, is there anything I can do? I said, you could hug me. And the two of us had a wonderful hug. And then, of course, she said, yes, I'm on antidepressants too. See? And I know she's wounded, or she wouldn't have responded to me that way, because that's something I've learned, that those who have had major losses, life-threatening illnesses, or loving parents are the ones who say, okay, how can I help you when you say I'm out of my antidepressants? They're still there for you, to listen to you and help you. The ones who haven't been through any disasters, oh, that's nice. I mean, you know, they just block it out and don't want to hear it. How are you? Fine. Okay, right.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that people who've experienced pain in their lives are more empathetic to others who are experiencing that too.
Yeah, because they realize others have been there, and they can handle it and talk about it. So, again, a lot of it has to do with how you're brought up, too, as I say. There are people I know who brought up with mottos to die by, you know, what their parents said to them, how they're a failure, they embarrass, I mean, they're dressed in dark. Well, here's the quote. My mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. Now, it struck me, too, that metaphor, were eating away at me. And I'm sure that's why she's overweight, you know, becoming addicted to food, nourishing herself, giving herself permission. And after she developed cancer, yeah, she went out and bought bright-colored dresses because her mother only dressed her in black and brown and navy, and changed her life. See? her comment was, I read your books, you gave me permission to be the person I was meant to be. I shouldn't have had to give her permission, if you know what I mean. She's got permission. It's her life. But she had to have a disaster to gain that permission. And that's sad. So, again, yeah, I point out to people, don't wait. Read the books. You have permission. See, around me right now while I'm talking to you, there's a couple of pictures of me as, a youngster. And I say to people, too, put shrines in your house. That could be like one of the exercises. Put pictures of yourself as a baby, as a child up, and love that kid. You know, respect and love that kid. It's you. Never mind what other people thought of that kid. You love that kid. And if you put up mottos, too, another exercise, put up mottos to live by around the house, not mottos to die by. One that I have, you see, because, again, of all the troubles we have, be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. And when you realize that nothing is lacking, the whole world belongs to you. That's from Lao Tzu. But when I read that, I said, okay, and I put it up in the kitchen. So every time I'm sitting and eating, I'm reading. And that really refocuses you on yourself and your life.
Well, Dr. Burney, you're talking about how your patients and the people that you've helped have come to you because they have these life-threatening illnesses, and it's like the catalyst for them to make changes in their life. But let's talk about the best ways. One of them is the Smile Journal, reading your books. Let's talk about how we can, from a healthy point now, get to that point where we don't get sick because we're living such a wonderful, joyful life.
Well, let me say that, because this is something I really say to people, don't do this to not die, okay, because you will die. And from my experience on the board of directors of heaven, the bitterest people in heaven are the vegetarian meditating joggers, you see, because they spend all the time doing things right and died anyway. So what I'm saying to people is go and enjoy your life. See, don't try to not die, but heal your life. See, if you try to not die, it's the same thing as I call waging a war. If you're fighting a disease, you're empowering the enemy. Mother Teresa said it beautifully. She was invited to an anti-war rally. She said, I'm not coming. And everybody was very disappointed. As they turned away, she said, but if you ever have a peace rally, call me. So that's what I'd like people to understand and focus on. How can I heal my life? How can I bring peace of mind into my life? Not how can I kill this or eliminate that. Eliminating a disease will be a byproduct. So you can incorporate treatment, a whole host of things, even operations, into your way of getting well. It's not that we're ruling out anything, but a big part of it is you and really the message you give your genes. So if you said, what's the best way of staying healthy? Again, it's back to living an authentic life, expressing emotions, particularly anger. Don't try to please everybody. Really live your authentic life. Then your genes get a message because they don't decide what to do. There's something called epigenetics, which is your internal chemistry affects genes. So when you have twin sisters and one is a sweet kid who makes mommy and daddy happy and internalizes her anger, and the other sister is a devil who's doing her thing and driving everybody nuts, and you say to an audience, who's more likely to get breast cancer? Everybody votes for the good kid. So, again, it's not about being good or bad. It's about being authentic and living your life and not internalizing things. And my website, I might mention to people, BernieSiegelMD.com, S-I-E-G-E-L. There's something called immune competent personality. Psychiatrist George Solomon put it together many years ago working with AIDS patients. So there's simple questions that tell me whether you are living what I call a survivor personality kind of life, you know, expressing feelings, saying no to things you don't want to do, asking for help, expressing anger, having meaning in your life, just very simple, straightforward things. But they tell you a lot about what your health is likely to be. Let me, one more thing, if I may, because I know I never stop talking, but it's, you know, one thing connects me with another. Harvard students were asked, did your parents love you, while they were attending Harvard? They were looked up 35 years later. Those who said, my parents loved me, approximately 28% had suffered a major illness. Those who said no, 98% had. You see, so again, you see how your behavior is affected by your self-worth and self-esteem. And if you care about yourself, then it doesn't mean you don't have chocolate ice cream, but you don't eat a quart every night. You know, you think about what is good for yourself.
Definitely. Well, if you want to get on the air and ask a question, we've got about 20 minutes left in the show. The number to call is 347-202-0129. That's 347-202-0129. So let's talk about something that puts a smile on all of our faces, the importance of pets.
Yes. You see, again, the chemistry. A study done in Australia. You have a heart attack and you go home to a house with a dog. A year later, about 5% of the people had died. If you didn't have a dog in the house, 26% of the people had died. Oh, the doctor in Australia had a sense of humor. He said, if everybody in Australia had a dog, we'd save $145 million a year in medical care. But what happens when you pet a dog? Oxytocin and serotonin levels go up. Those are bonding hormones that go up after a woman gives birth. So you bond with other people, not to mention you have a relationship with the animal. And believe me, it studies with plants and goldfish demonstrate the same thing. If you, this was done in nursing homes, if you were given responsibility for the plant or the goldfish in your room, see, feed it, water, sunlight, while across the hall they were told we're decorating your room, the people who were given responsibility lived 5 to 7 years longer in one study than the people on the other side of the hall who were not given responsibility, so had no connection or relationship. So pets do two things. They change your chemistry, and they also give you a connection or relationship, not to mention walking and doing other things. So exercise and a whole host of things that they bring into your life. But I think the most important is the relationship, that somebody depends on you and, you know, it brings meaning into your life. And we've always had a house full of animals that drive us a little nuts, but, you know, it's like children again. You know, you got to feed everybody and give them a life, because that's something I really feel is important, that if you're going to have pets, yes, that I want to take care of them and treat them properly.
So do children serve a similar purpose, like as far as... Not to equate them with dogs, but
no,
I mean,
but
as far as
know,
keeping people
studies,
alive and happy.
Studies have shown that people often connect more with their dog than with their children. And this isn't funny, but it is true that when, you know, married couples were asked who they would prefer to keep, the dog or the, you know, the husband or wife, more voted for the dog than they did for their spouse. So it shows you, you know, something about relationships. But what was your question again? Let me.
Oh, it was just as far as whether children were, I guess, equal to the benefit of having a pet.
Well, I think the problem is, again, with parents. Yes, children could be. But if you judge your children, say you didn't get an A in school, you're not, you know, I can't be proud of you. We're more likely to be tough on our kids than animals. Because literally, if somebody says to me, how should I raise my child? I say, I tell you what you do. Get a puppy, go to your vet and say, how do I raise the puppy? And these are words from veterinarians. Exercise, affection, love, trust, respect, consistency, discipline. Those are words out of people, you know, who are trained to help with animals. And if you went home and did that with your children, love, trust, discipline, respect, you know, consistency, affection, exercise, okay, then you're going to have some wonderful kids. But when you are tougher on your kids, see, we're less forgiving of our children than our animals. You know, think of when your dog or cat pees or poops in the living room, you know, it's like, well, what are you going to do? It's a dog, it's a cat. But when your kid does something, you know, what's wrong with you? What's the matter with you? And that's something I try to get across. it's okay to criticize somebody, but you don't blame them, if you know what I mean. It's not, there's something wrong with you. You can say, your behavior is disturbing me. We need to talk about it. That's very different than there's something wrong with you. And so you can talk about it. And I learned sometimes wonderful reasons, you know, and then I ended up admiring our kids when they would tell me why they acted in a certain way, because I thought they were trying to resolve something and, you know, were doing something that I didn't understand. But when I'd listen, I'd think, that's pretty smart, okay. You know, and I could put up with it.
So, Dr. Burney, the Namaste Publishing theme of the month for, what month is this, March?
Yes.
Is meditation.
Yeah, good.
So, what is your viewpoint on meditation? What do you recommend for people?
Well, I do it every day, every morning. I take quiet time, and that's part of why I like walking the dogs 3 times a day, because I get a chance to be with myself and do my thing. But to me, the meditation is an incredibly important theme, because another book I've written or participated in, Faith, Hope, and Healing, there's stories, inspiring stories by cancer patients, but after each one is a reflection by Bernie Siegel. Why a reflection? The ugly duckling is thrown out of the house. But he doesn't spend his life bitter and resentful, letting his mother's words eat away at him. So one day he's on a still pond. He sees some swans, looks at the water, thinking how beautiful they are and how ugly he is, and he realizes, wait a minute, I'm a swan. Joseph Campbell uses a different example. A tiger dies giving birth to a baby and chasing some goats. The goats come back, see she's died, little baby sitting there. They say, let's raise him. So the tiger grows up thinking he's a goat. One day another tiger comes along, says, hey, dumbbell, what are you doing here? You're a tiger. Come with me. Takes him to a still pond and says, look, you're a tiger. You look like me. And Campbell says, it's like yoga and meditation. And what I've learned is you don't see yourself, your reflection, until you quiet your life and you quiet your mind. And to me, that's what meditation allows us to do, to really know what's right for us. I do a lot of work with drawings and dreams as well, because, again, that's when people, the unconscious, can come forward and present things and images that, you know, when people are thinking, what should I do, where should I, what job, what a, it's, okay, draw yourself. And then we see what's coming from a deeper wisdom. And I think when you get into meditation, then again, you're quieting your mind and getting into that deeper place. And you have to be ready for it, because I think a lot of people are afraid that if I quiet my mind, who knows what will come up. I'd rather be busy, distracted, numb. And I mean that literally, that we don't give ourselves a chance. But if you have the courage, stop, quiet your mind, and listen to what is being said in your head that you need to pay attention to.
So, Bernie, that brings up a question for me, and that is, what about people who find or think, perhaps, that meditation would be boring? Do you think that worry about boredom is really fear?
I think they're more fearful, yeah. And you know, the other thing, and I have to say, I was not a believer in any of this stuff. Years ago, I attended a workshop that Carl Simonton ran back in the 70s, and he was using imagery with cancer patients. In those days, it was, you know, the Pac-Man is eating up your cancer and things like that. But I thought it was all crazy, and so I was just sitting there listening and not even closing my eyes to participate. But when he looked at me, I thought, oh, he knows I'm not doing it, so I'll close my eyes. And when I closed my eyes, I couldn't believe at the experience I had and the wisdom. You know, like meeting an inner guide, all kinds of things that happened, and the wisdom that was in it. And then, I did a drawing for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, which I thought was an outdoor scene that I saw in my imagery. And she started asking me about my life. I said, why are you asking? She said, well, I could see from the drawing. And I couldn't believe that I draw this crazy little picture that meant nothing to me, you know, except it was an image in my mind, and she knows about my life. I mean, one simple example so people understand. She said, what are you covering up? I was having a lot of trouble with emotions and feelings at that time. I said, why why do you ask me that? She said, you put snow on a mountain. I said, well, yeah, it's a mountain with snow in the picture. She said, Bernie, the page is white. You took a white crayon and added a layer to the page. What are you covering? And boy, you know, it's questions like that. It was like, holy smokes. So, yeah, you might be afraid to go within and know, and I think some people are. As I said, they'd rather be numb, have a drink, take a drug, you know, or just keep yourself distracted. But to me, I want to know my inner truth and what's right for me and my path in life. So the unconscious is trying to create it and literally is creating your future. So the decisions you make are about what's going to happen to you. And I think when you get within and know your true self, then you make the right decisions and end up in the right places.
Well, Dr. Bernie, we just have a few minutes left in the show, and so I'm curious, what do you think is the main point that you want to get across to listeners today?
Oh, it just popped into my head. It was that the reason, say, because, well, let me put it another way, like one of my questions. Do you mind if I test you for a moment? If you could be God for a day, why would you want to be God?
Oh,
answer.
Wow, I've never been asked that question. Why would I want to be God? Because
yeah.
It would be really cool to have all that power, I guess.
Yeah, see, that's what most people feel. But what I discuss with them is, to me, the right answer is so I'd understand why. See, why do we have a world with all these problems? Why is it so imperfect? And the answer is that a perfect world is not creation. You know, that what gives our life meaning is our compassion, is our love for one another. And sadly, this world certainly is not demonstrating it in many ways, but my hope is someday we will. But that's what people need to understand, that their actions every day have meaning. They're making choices. And I would hope with some of my writings that we, you know, help them to make better choices and make choices that make it a better world, that we raise our consciousness. Because I literally feel that When the body dies, the consciousness does not. So if we have become truly educated, then we're helping the future, because they'll be born with our knowledge, that we are impregnated with the consciousness that has preceded us. I think that's what some people call past lives, that they're very aware of what has gone on in the past. But if we all become graduate students, you see, at a level of consciousness, then the future is going to be a heck of a lot better than if we're all still struggling in kindergarten and uneducated. Then the future is going to be difficult for the next generation. So I'd say to everybody, educate yourself about life and contribute to it.
Wonderful. And I'm just wondering, do you feel like you're a graduate student at this point?
I feel,
or
I'm still learning. I'm better
yeah.
than I was. And this is the way I test myself. And I say this to people all the time. How do you feel about other people? And if you said, I don't know, they're dumb and, you know, bitter and resentful, I'd say you're projecting what's within you, that you're a dumbbell, you're bitter, you're resentful, so you project it onto everybody else and don't have to take responsibility. And what I've noticed in my life is people are nicer and nicer. So I know I'm getting nicer. I'm not so critical of them. I'm not dealing with a lot of internal issues and blaming them. And it's making my life a lot easier. So when things go wrong, and I'm talking about simple things, you know, let's say I have leaky plumbing in the house and I call the plumber, he says, I'll be there at 1 o'clock. He doesn't show up till 3:30. You know, I would say 10 years ago I'd be very upset with him and bitter and look what you did and, you know. And now when he comes, I ask him, what's going on? How come you're late? What happened? You okay? You know, usually it now takes them longer because I start talking to them as if they were my patient, you know. And that's when you learn, you know, that, yeah, I have cancer and, oh, boy. You know, you, again, hear about their wounds and we become friends. And I know that they'll be back next time not minding coming to my house because of the kind of relationship we had over a problem, but no longer was it a problem. It was now a reason that the two of us got together and something good happened.
Beautiful. What a wonderful note to leave the show on. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, the other thing I love is, just as you said to me, you know, we're going to run out of time. That to me is the best teacher and therapist in my life. Someday we're all going to run out of lifetime. And therefore, I don't let others steal my life away, rob me of my time. So even if somebody does something that upsets me, robs me, I mean, all these things have happened. I don't go around bitter and resentful for 6 months trying to get even or wishing I, you know, could catch that person. I let go. It doesn't mean I don't take action, but then I let go and I don't let them keep robbing me of my lifetime.
Beautiful.
And I would say, beside that, if anybody's driving you nuts, say to them, I love you. Then they don't know what to do with you. So you kill with kindness, you torment with tenderness, and you enjoy your life.
Kill them with kindness. I love that.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Bernie. And your website is BernieSiegelMD.com.
Right. And people can connect with me through that if they want to.
Wonderful. So if they want to email you or have a chat with you, they can do that?
Yeah, it goes right to me. Right.
Wonderful. And the book is 101 Exercises for the Soul, Simple Practices for a Healthy Body, Mind, and Spirit, and it is out in paperback now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It's really a pleasure. A lot of good
questions.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. Take care.
Right.
Bye-bye. So that was Dr. Bernie Siegel. Again, it's BernieSiegelMD.com, and you can check out his book, 101 Exercises for the Soul. Next week, we are going to have Patricia Aberdeen on the show. She is author of Megatrends 2010, The Rise of Conscious Capitalism. So that is going to be a whole new topic for next week. Very exciting. And I also have some amazing and exciting news. Eckhart Tolle, author of The Power of Now, which is published by Namaste Publishing, he is going to be on the show in April. So stay tuned for more details about that, because we're going to be doing a lot of work on getting prepared for that and hopefully taking some of your questions as well to pass them on to Eckhart Tolle. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. It has been a wonderful hour. Thank you for sharing your loving energy. Have a wonderful evening and a wonderful week. Namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.
There's a new